Chatbots are about as popular as cable companies. But every new technology needs time to mature. The continued evolution of conversational AI and NLP is making both low-code and no-code chatbot deployments successful both from a customer standpoint and a business standpoint. But a successful deployment requires a solid strategy, appropriate measures of success, and great conversational design. This week, I talk with Jim Rowe, who's been helping businesses with their chatbot deployments for years. This week on Next in Queue, we touch on why people hate chatbots, what conversational design is and why it matters, how conversational AI has allowed chatbots to evolve, chatbot mistakes to avoid, when you should and should not name your chatbot, and the biggest opportunities for chatbots. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy 2 Vision. Eliminate blind spots and see right through every conversation with Happy 2 Vision. Learn more at HAPPITU.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining another episode of Next in Queue. Today, I have the monk joining me. I have popped my collar. The monk is Jim Rowe Bot. Jim Rowe Bot, if you look him up on LinkedIn. Welcome to the show, Jim. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks for inviting me along. Yeah, I do look like a monk for some reason in this hoodie. I actually got this from a company in the UK called Reviews.io, probably the best customer reviews company in the world.
Nice.
It's my favorite hoodie. So whenever I'm a little bit chilly, it goes on.
I know that they're going to be very happy that they just got that free pub. So good for them. Good for them for picking a really good hoodie to send you. So, Jim, today we are going to talk about chatbots because that is your thing, chatbots. But before we do that, let's just talk a little bit about you. How did you get into this space? Where are you from? Tell me a little bit about yourself.
So born in the UK in the 70s, was very lucky to have really hardworking working class parents who foresaw the computer age coming well ahead of the game. Bought me my first computer when I was 10, and very quickly I was hooked into the world of IT. I then made a change of direction as a young 16-year-old man and joined the armed forces. Did that for 16 years till I was 32. Knew I was going to be leaving the forces, so started basically learning. Took exercise books with me all over the world, and then every time I was back in the UK, took exams. Left that, went into IT. Really enjoyed the role I got with a really talented IT manager who literally taught me everything. And then I took his job when he left. I then left that and kind of freelanced around different aspects of web, really. Never really took off, ended up doing a lot of social media. And then I came across chatbots in 2017. Like many people that move from kind of sales and marketing or social media into bots, I came via the no-code messenger-driven bots and was immediately hooked. And you know, when I do get hooked into something, I do that 10,000 hours thing. And I just dived into it whole hog, discovered the whole world of NLP, natural language processing, natural language understanding, AI, machine learning, conversational design, AI training, all of that. And just fell in love with the whole niche. And then I get to this stage now where, you know, I'm very privileged to work with some lovely clients and have built chatbots or conversational AI. Chatbots is a term everybody knows. Conversational AI really is quite niche amongst people working in conversational AI and kind of enterprise level chatbots, really. So I've ended up working with some really great partners and continue to do so. And then started creating a lot of content, which then raised my profile. And yeah, it's a fascinating time to be in this niche.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back a minute. I want to talk about that first computer. Mm. What model was it?
So it was a Commodore.
All right, good.
Yeah, it was a VIC-20. So my parents weren't rich. They couldn't afford to buy me the Commodore 64. So I got the Commodore VIC-20, which was a great, you know, I used to remember this. So this is going back to 82, that I would go and buy a programming magazine that used to be released. And I would literally have it open with a ruler on the line of code, and I would type it in. So it was kind of my introduction to IT. After that, I ended up with an Amstrad, which is Alan Sugar, the entrepreneur. That was his company. Amstrad CPC 464. Again, it was cheaper. All my friends had the Amiga. I was very jealous.
of course.
And that was around the same time as schools in the UK got the BBC computer, which was, you know, that was the big drive by the government and society to get ready for the digital age, which was, as far as, you know, government decisions go, that was a great move. So it meant that, you know, the UK was kind of up there leading that digital charge. It was a fascinating time to be a child, for sure.
Yeah, you started a little bit earlier than me. I started with Commodore 128.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got lucky there. And sadly, I did do quite a bit of programming on it. Don't get me wrong, but I also played just a lot of video games. So,
oh, yeah.
So we're not here to reminisce about the days of Commodores and Amigas. We're here to discuss chatbots and conversational AI. So you just touched on this a minute ago. Let's talk about what's the difference between a chatbot by itself and a chatbot that uses conversational AI.
I think as far as the user stroke customer is concerned, they're one on the same. At one end of the scale of a chatbot, you've got what you might term the dumb chatbot, which is, but you know, it is keywords and button presses, very simple responses, no real intelligence. And then as you move up the scale, you get more and more intelligent. And that's the only real difference I see. A chatbot's a chatbot. I think customers will always refer to conversational AI as a chatbot. That name is embedded now in culture, and I don't see it going away anytime soon. I just don't see customers saying like digital assistant or it's going to be chatbot or robot. That's all it's going to be. Conversational AI is the computer driven intelligence behind it that is going to drive it forward over the next 2 decades, probably. The technology is moving at a pace, massive amounts of investment. But it's interesting. Chatbots is weird because you've got the very low end, like small business, little bakery, barbers, whatever, doing cracking little dumb chatbots to engage with their customers. Fantastic, giving out coupon codes and staying in touch. And then at the other end, you've got big business with super intelligent bots. And then in the middle, it's just a bit meh. But the technology's adapting quickly. And I think that a lot of that is down to what we would call no code, low code AI chatbots. That's the market that's going to be the most exciting. So, you know, recently I've started using a product called Juji, J-U-J-I. And it's probably the easiest no-code AI chatbot product I've ever used. And it just gives us an indication of where the technology is headed.
So it's interesting to me that you're in this space because, and you're so excited about it, because I thought everyone hated chatbots.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, everybody, that, no, what it is everybody hates a bad chatbot. And unfortunately, most of them are bad. And that is partly because the technology is still developing. It's partly because you have got teams of people, or sometimes just a single person tasked with creating a conversational experience who's got no experience in doing that. They've never project managed it. They've never delivered it. They've never done a course in conversational design. You know, you can't, you know, if websites arrived today, you couldn't just create one. You'd have to go and learn it. And let's be honest, websites in the early days were awful. And unfortunately, still the early days of chatbots, and some of the conversational design is awful. Some of the technology implementations are awful. But you've got a thriving community that's trying to change that.
I do remember my first website was a GeoCities website, and it was awful. It was awful. So, I mean, given that that's kind of the state that we're in, and obviously it's fast-paced, rapidly evolving, but why would I want to deploy a chatbot today?
So the starting point, where I think the starting point should be is, what problem are you trying to solve for the customer that is also a problem you can solve for the business? So what you find with a lot of businesses, if we take the customer service type solution first, because that's where it's mostly being successful, there are elements of customer interactions that happen a lot, but don't really need a human. So for instance, it might be banking, and you simply want to order a replacement debit card. Now, it really doesn't need a human. So you're looking for where it's repetitive work for the agents and boring, with customers just want a quick solution, and they want it done 24/7, 7 days a week with no fuss. That kind of then is perfect. If you can get those edge cases, if you can do those, you're already winning. You know, you see some businesses where 5 automated conversational AI processors is 30% of the agent's time. And those agents then can be deployed to service customers that have got more complicated issues. That's in the customer service point of view, that's where you're aiming. In sales, in terms of conversational AI and selling or e-commerce, then it's a slightly different approach. Yes, you've got the customer service element, but you've also got the kind of recommendation bot, selling bots, which can be powerful, but can be quite tricky.
Yeah, I would imagine. So you mentioned that you think they'll always be referred to as chatbot or bot and not things like assistant. We already have voice assistants, and some people, you know, have them in their homes. They're using them. They have names. I think we know those names, Alexa, Siri, etc. If I deploy a chatbot, shouldn't I just give it a name?
Potentially, yes. We have got, you know, the likes of Siri, Google Home, Alexa are fantastic. I use them all. But in terms of should you give what we would traditionally call a text-based bot, or actually even a voice bot, a name, in most cases, I would say yes, but I think it's by use case. There are certain types of transactional bot that perhaps don't need personality And if they don't need personality, they don't need a name. I'm trying to think, you know, for instance, if you deployed one for the local government, then you might consider saying, well, let's not really give that a name as such. you know, it's for reporting missed garbage collection or illegally parked cars or whatever it might be. We might not give that a name. But again, there's a lot of weight on giving something a name because you do humanize it. Humanize without fooling people, making people get fooled and think they're talking to a human. So in most cases, a name's useful. But in some cases, not, you know, maybe it's just a step too far.
So do you think then that, because obviously there's a chat bot and then there's live chat, which is a real human behind the chat. Do you think that those two should always be identified? So if I have a chat bot and I give it a name, should I always say, by the way, you're not talking to a person?
Yes, 100%. I think actually in California, they passed a law some time ago that you have to specify that it's a that you're talking to software effectively. There is no better way to make a customer feel stupid than them discovering partway through a conversation that they're not talking to a real person, and stupid customers don't buy. So yeah, if you make them feel stupid, they're not buying your product or service. So for me, you know, you can introduce, hi, I'm Jeff, your digital assistant, your coworker, whatever else. Yes, you've told them that it's got a name and you've told them that it's not human. They know it's a chatbot. In their heads, they don't see digital assistant, they see it's a chatbot. And, you know, some of them will roll their eyes. Some of them will just go away because of the experience they've had with poorly designed chatbots. The fact that no code, low code software allows anybody to create one is a real double-edged sword. So it means that, yes, businesses that perhaps couldn't afford a chatbot 5 years ago now can, but it also means there's some awful ones out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So this brings up a really good point. And that is, how much coding should I expect myself, whether it's my team, whatever the case may be, to have to be done in order to deploy a good chatbot? We talked about there are plenty of bad ones out there. Do I need to know how to code to put out a chatbot, or do I need to hire a developer to make that happen?
So I'm actually writing a document on this because I think it's quite confusing to people. But the short version of it is you can create a fully functioning conversational chatbot that is able to answer questions and guide you using no code. The moment you want to then hook into back-end systems, you're then moving into low code. And then at the extreme, where it's legacy systems and low code just won't cut the mustard, then you're going for fully code conversational AI. For most businesses in very basic customer service roles, where you're not looking to automate a process, no code is absolutely fine. And ideally, no code with AI, which is what Jugi is. So it's super intelligent, no code chatbot development. And literally anybody can create a mind-blowing conversational experience. But the moment you need to hook into a CRM, a finance system, a booking system, application systems, you know, if you're a university, whatever, and you want people to be able to sign up to the next MBA, then you're starting to need potentially some coded work if you want to automate that process. So if you know code, fantastic. It's going to really help you move your chatbot along, but it's not the end of the world. And the other thing is, I suppose, is around APIs. You know, a lot of the APIs now let you hook up a conversational AI chatbot. So there's a little bit of coding work there, but I know from experience you can hire in that service for sure.
Yeah. So I think any business, one of the things that they look at when they look at any technology solution, it doesn't matter what it is, they're looking at the budget. And obviously, this is going to vary widely based on, number one, how much coding I need to do. Can I get away with a no-code solution, or am I an enterprise that probably is going to need a lot more done? But like, where's that barrier to entry ballpark figure? Where are we talking about? If I'm a small business and I want to have a chatbot on my website, where am I starting?
Well, it's interesting. When I'm working with larger businesses, one of the first pieces of work I do with them is develop their scope, which is what do you want the conversational AI to do? What's its goal? What skills do you have internally? What's the budget? What does good look like in 12 weeks? What does good look like in 2 years? And basically pull this document together. It's a paid piece of work because it's about a week's work. And then I will make recommendations for a low budget, medium budget, and high budget offerings with the pros and cons of each one, and then allow them to make a decision on which platform suits their needs best, not only this year, but you know, several years in the future. For smaller businesses, it's a little trickier, but actually you could effectively build a fully functional no-code chatbot for less than $100 a month. Wow. If you were building it internally, there is some nice platforms out there that will allow you to deploy not only to the website, but to Messenger and Instagram and WhatsApp. I suppose it's a bit like Squarespace for web. We can all deploy you know, a website on Squarespace, but we can't all deploy a good one. And I think many of the no-code platforms are that. If you get a good one, then they've got really great manuals, great training videos. They'll teach you some conversational design and they'll kind of guide you along. But it's a low-value item. You're not going to get an account manager who's helping you develop your strategy and doing your conversational design with you. It's a real skill, just like web development's a skill, just like SEO's a skill, just like copywriting is a skill. Conversational design is that. Thankfully, we've got a lot of freelance conversational designers entering the market now. So for smaller or medium-sized businesses, they can hire in that resource. But often they don't really know what they're buying. That's the issue.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about conversational design. You've mentioned this term a few times. Can you talk to us about what conversational design is really, and why that piece is probably the most challenging piece of building a good chatbot?
Yeah, so when I initially started in chatbots, I'd never heard the term, but I was kind of teaching myself conversational design through trial and error. Thankfully, now there are some good books out there, lots of free resources. You can go on courses now to learn conversational design and get certified, which is fantastic. And conversational design is effectively teaching you how to structure the conversational UX for each and every conversation, whether that's an FAQ, whether it's the welcome message, whether it's a handover to a human, live chat, taking personal details. Whatever it might be, it's how you build that conversation. And it will take into account lots of elements, you know, the copy, the UX, how it looks, added in rich media such as videos and images and audio. So there's a lot going on. It's far too easy to make your conversational design complicated when actually you're trying to take it down to just what is needed, but within the capsule of the bot's personality or the brand personality. So if you take a famous brand like, I don't know, Innocent Drinks, you know, their brand is fun, it's a little bit edgy. So you would expect their conversational AI to follow that brand voice. They've got a really strong brand voice. If it was, I don't know, Michelin tires, strong, old, well-developed brand. And if you didn't get the conversational design right, it would just dilute the brand. It would effectively damage the brand. So conversational design is really the glue that holds the technology together. And I'm really passionate about conversational design. Done well, it's a thing of beauty. Done poorly, it's an absolute horror show.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like just like anything that you're going to deploy or change within a business, there's a big risk to customer experience if you get it wrong. So let's talk about, aside from the design piece, conversational design piece, getting that wrong, what are some other common mistakes that you see? Because obviously you've worked with a lot of different companies that have deployed a lot of different solutions. And I know that you love just kind of testing out companies' solutions. What have you seen that just raises the hair on the back of your neck?
So starting from the very outset, you've literally got a handful of seconds to get the start of a conversation right. So that initial message, and it's really prevalent here in Europe, which is the first thing they throw up is like a GDPR message. You know, that you would never start a conversation with someone, you know, even if it was over the phone. You know, with kind of legislation, regulation, that kind of stuff. And I see that a lot. And people have to agree and they have to do this. And it talks about collecting personal details. You know, you've had to read 500 words and click something before you've even started a conversation. So that kind of thing really gets my back up because it's not needed. Yes, you can mention GDPR and you can leave a link for they can click and go and read something. But don't do it until the moment you're collecting details about someone, the moment you are actually dealing with personal data. If it's through a website, you've got nothing. You know, you've not collected a name, a phone number, an email, any of that. So you don't need to do it. If you have collected that stuff from a previous conversation, you don't need to get them to opt in again. So it's thinking about the best way to start a conversation that is going to make the customer feel like they're valued. And I think a GDPR message at the beginning is not the way to do it. The second big issue I see is in the strategy. And this, unfortunately, happens a lot in bigger businesses, is they want to make their conversational AI the best it can be from day one. And it just doesn't work that way. Ideally, you're looking for a minimum viable bot as your first launch. Take that through user testing, deploy it, get some data, analyze that data, look for where the pressure is, where you're getting it wrong, where you're getting it right, where you can add more value, and then build it and just layering it on top of that, on that conversational AI. Every day, 1% better, 1% better, 1% better, 1% better, improving the experience, moving it on, automating more processes, giving the customer what they want where possible. And unfortunately, people, you know, will turn up with 180 FAQs on day one that they just want to build. And it's just not the way to do it. And it's interesting, and this happens all the time, is the FAQs that are first automated are the ones off the website. And 80% of those are not questions the customer is asking.
Yeah, it seems if you don't already know what customers want from you, then that deployment of how do I answer these kind of low-hanging fruit quickly and easily at a low cost so I can save my complex interactions for my agents, that doesn't work if I don't know what those low-hanging fruit are, or if I have a, if I'm building out for fruit that doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, and that happens a lot. A lot of wasted time, effort, and money into creating conversations around FAQs that never get asked. So if, typically, if you're building, and this is the way I always do it, if you are building a chatbot from new, a single FAQ to be built and trained and tested is a minimum 2 hours. So yeah, time that 2 hours by 180 FAQs, that's a lot of time and effort for potentially conversations that will really happen. Might happen once or twice a year. It's just not worth it. Thankfully, in the bigger businesses, there's companies out there now that can actually use software to analyze phone calls, CRM entries, emails, and give you an idea of the type of questions that are out there. But for smaller businesses, unfortunately, it's a manual piece of work.
Yeah.
It's people that understand customers just really taking a snapshot of what customers are really asking. And below that, what's behind the question, what customers need, so you can preempt it.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly been my experience that a lot of people don't actually know what their customers are calling for, what questions they actually ask. And so let's start off figuring that out so that we're addressing actual FAQs and not LFAQs, the less frequently asked questions.
Yeah, and also one that people forget is with some customer questions, there's always a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do when we automate this conversation to also tackle that one, two, or three follow-up questions that always happen?
Yeah.
People forget about those.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about measures of success, because certainly in the CX world, the customer care world, the contact center world, wherever you fall into those, you probably want to measure things. I know that in the contact center world, we're really good at measuring things. How do I go about measuring success for the deployment of a chatbot?
So if you've worked with me, you'll know what the measures are because we've built the scope together. And that's included in there. So we know before we've even really deployed anything what we're going to measure. But I think there's two areas that you measure. I think if you are effectively deploying a digital agent to work alongside your human agents, you've got the same metrics. So it's how many conversations they had, how many they handled successfully, how many required a follow-up, whatever agent metrics you're using, build the same in for your digital agent. Because it's a great comparison. Obviously, the digital agent doesn't sleep, doesn't have holidays or anything else. But in terms of percentages, how many, you want it to be as good, if not better, at answering customer questions. Really, otherwise, what's the point? You know?
Yeah.
And then the second one is like the overall, overarching big numbers, which is the ones that really impacts the customer firstly. So always being, you know, availability is a great one. I did come across this weirdly in the last few months where a chatbot would only be deployed when agents weren't available, which I thought was an odd way to work. Hmm. So it would say you can speak to the chatbot, but at certain times of the day, the chatbot wasn't there, which was an odd decision when really the strategy should have been leave that as a contact option but also they could choose an agent if you want it that way. And if they choose an agent and an agent's not available at that moment, just give them an average waiting time, but and just say, if you don't want to wait for the agent, you're welcome to speak to whatever the name of the chatbot is, rather than wait. So for me, there's the overarching ones, how many conversations were successful, the customer got the result they want, the customer got what they needed, and I never say the result they wanted, because they might be asking for a refund and you don't give refunds. So they're not always going to get what they want, but they got an answer. And then the other one is how many of those conversations then needed to go to a human agent, because you want to reduce that where possible. You know,
right.
This is why I say about an MVB, minimum viable bot, is you want to make that digital assistant, digital colleague, do a handful of things really, really well. If you can do that, the customer knows it can do those things, and they know a human deals with everything else. That is a nice deployment, I think. Got to be clear on what's possible.
So I'm curious, certainly the people listening to this podcast may be involved in a lot of different kinds of businesses. I'm curious what kinds of use cases you've seen that were successful, but maybe we're thinking outside of the box. And maybe for someone who might be involved in a business that they're thinking, well, chatbot's not for me, maybe there is an application for them.
Yeah, it's interesting because use cases can vary massively. And I sometimes look at certain niches and don't get why they are not deploying them. And then I look at other niches and I think, why have you bothered? It doesn't add any value. So one, a niche I've recently got involved with, I'm really enjoying and I see great potential, is franchises. So obviously you've got the franchise owner, the franchisor, and then you've got the franchisees, you know, and you think about some of the big ones, Hertz Car Rentals, McDonald's, you know, I think something like 8 of the top 10 are food. But there is thousands and thousands of great franchises out there. But unfortunately, what happens is that at the coalface, at the business end, dealing with customers, the brand can get really diluted and poor service can be given, opportunities can be missed. And my feeling is franchises, certain franchises can take control of the conversation. So by deploying a chatbot, and it might be a simple franchise like carpet cleaning, you know, and they've got 10,000 individual business owners out there driving around in vans. And currently what happens is they all have their own little mini site and people fill out a form or they phone up or whatever else. But you could have a 24/7 chatbot for every single one of those carpet cleaners, which is then all back to a global database where the NLP engine, the intelligence, is taking all those tens of thousands of conversations and making that digital chatbot better. And it's servicing all the customers at every level. So I think franchises it's really an open goal. One that is hardly being done. Think of something like franchise gyms, Anytime Fitness, Fitness First, any of those. There's such an opportunity there because, you know, processes like members or somebody messaging and asking open times or how much is membership or, you know, I think, you know, the end goal when you're trying to sell a membership for one of these franchise gym is to get the person to step over the threshold. And then the human can do the selling. They do the tour, they tell them about their success, they ask them about their goals and their fears. The human does the selling. But what you can do is you can use the chatbot to answer some of those very early prospect questions. But ideally, you're just trying to get them in. You're just trying to get them their foot through the door. So franchises, I think, is a fantastic one.
Interesting.
Venues. Take something like entertainment venues, whether it's a bowling alley, a trampoline park, whatever it might be. They get the same questions week in, week out. Honest, probably they've got 30 questions that they are answering over email, SMS, phone calls. It's the same questions answered over and over again. Really easy. And with conversational AI, you can make it really simple. You know, they come onto Messenger. So venues, a lot of them will either use like Messenger or WhatsApp and then the web. And a simple, you know, mum saying, oh, it's my son's birthday next week, thinking about bringing 12 kids next Saturday morning, sometime around 11, do you have capacity? Now, that sounds like a complicated question. And be honest, a simple chatbot would fail in that question. But a nice no-code AI chatbot would be able to decipher that, check if there's capacity, and then come back and say, yeah, we've got capacity for, you know, reinforce. Yes, we've got capacity for 12 children on that date. Where all we ask is that they're between these ages and this ages, and there's at least two adults or whatever it might be. Those kind of venues is really easy to do. At cinema, you know, you've got the information, you know what you're showing, you know what the times are. So if somebody comes to the chat bar and says, what time is the new Bond movie on? It should be able to answer in a split second. So there are many use cases. I think many businesses owners don't realize we've moved far beyond the dumb chatbot and that AI can be a real asset to their business.
Yeah, I would think in some cases, though, there's a lure to using new technology to solve problems that don't exist or are already solved by something. So you just mentioned a use case that I think actually isn't a problem, right? There are other potential questions there, but if I'm on a website for a theater, I know what the show times are and what movies they're playing. And I probably don't need a chatbot to execute on that. Now, there may be lots of other questions. What instances have you seen where people are solving problems that don't exist?
So the main one I see, and I was guilty of this when I first started, is you build a conversational experience that is a replica of what's on the website. So you build in about, services, contact us, and all of that. That is the common one. And I get why people do it, because it's easy to do it. And what they've done is they've started from a place of knowledge. They understand that everything is ordered in that way for the customer to consume it in the best way. And they think, just like I thought, that if you just replicate that in a conversation, then that's better. And actually it's not, because it takes longer. Mm-hmm. So that is very common for those smaller businesses. If we're talking about big business, then I've already mentioned it, which is they literally automate every FAQ without giving it much thought.
Yeah. Spending a bunch of money solving no one's problems whatsoever.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure within smaller businesses, perhaps not within bigger business, there's a lot of keeping up with the Joneses. You know, oh, look, our competitor's got a chatbot, we better get one. Yeah. And sometimes it's not required. So, like, the cinema one's an interesting one. I actually think the cinema one would work better in voice. Mm. So for your Alexa, you would have the Cineworld app. And you could just say, hey Alexa, when is the next showing of Bond at Cineworld, wherever? And it would come back and give you an answer. So you do that while you're doing the laundry or whatever else. So as a voice solution, I think it would work really, really well. But as you said, that type of information is readily available on Google anyway.
Yeah. Well, if someone's going to deploy that, I just ask that they name it Kramer, because I will just call it for no good reason. So, Jim, you know, lots of exciting stuff going on in the world of chatbots and conversational AI. What's the next big jump? What's the next big thing that doesn't exist today that you think is really going to change the industry?
So these actually do exist, but they're not really that, you don't find them that much out in the wild. And I think that is true personalization and really useful. So I have a dream. I have a dream going forward that our digital assistant of the future will be our digital assistant. It'll be our concierge. So I'll walk past Alexa or whatever. It'll be whatever I've decided to name it. And I'll say, right, I'm about to leave the house. I should be down by the metro in the next 15 minutes. Could you book me a taxi for when I get off at the other end? And it knows. Mm-hmm. It knows me. It looks in my calendar. It can see I've got a meeting. It doesn't need to know whether, it knows where the taxi is going because it can see the meeting. Yeah. It knows the kind of taxi. It knows the taxi firm that I prefer to use. It checks the metro. It sees what time it's due in. I think we are really going to get within the next 5 to 10 years to that level of personalization. And when you tie that in with brands, so whatever big brand that you're party to, whether it's e-commerce or Netflix or whatever it might be, it's going to know. So for instance, you know, Netflix, I could have my own concierge that has the plugins for the Netflix data. And I say to my concierge, hey, Sarah, I was watching a movie. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. It had Matthew McConaughey in it. What was it? And she'll just tell you. Yeah. And she'll say, oh, it's this movie. Would you like to play it? No, but I'll probably watch it on Thursday with a wife. And he puts it in the calendar. I think that is going to be the future of conversational AI. Oh, and obviously Web3. You know, you're going to have non-human avatars in a Web3 world that are indistinguishable from people. So you're going to walk into the virtual Nike store, and the person behind the counter is going to be conversational AI, and you are not going to know the difference.
So you can buy your virtual shoes.
Oh, yes.
So one of the things that you're talking about, this personalization, and I think this is something I struggle with personally. I feel like the company that has gotten to this the most is Google. But I do think there are some concerns that a lot of people have about all the information that companies like Google or Facebook have about us. And so there's this trade-off. How much information do I want you to have to achieve a level of personalization versus, you know, I really don't want you prying in my life that much. Where do you see that playing out?
It's interesting because there's lots of work being done on data ownership. And obviously, I think the blockchain is going to play a major part in data and personalization. It is going to come. And what I think is going to happen is that you're going to hold your data, all of it, in a vault. And we're going to have a way that you are able to share effortlessly the bits you need for a process to happen with Netflix, with BBC, with whatever e-commerce, with Nike, with Adidas, whoever. But it actually remains within your vault. They can use it for that thing, but then it comes back to your vault and it's locked down by you. It's fully owned by you. Your data is you. I think that's where the hyper-personalization will come in. So you will ask a question. The software behind will reach out to that brand. It will present them with just the information that it needs to answer the question, as long as you've authorized it. I think that's potentially going to be the future. So your concierge might say to you, for me to be able to ask Nike that, I'm going to have to share your phone number. Are you okay doing this? This once? And you say, yes, please. And she shares the phone number and then you get a text, whatever. But I think data ownership is going to shift back to the individual.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I don't see how, though, without legislation that happens, right? I mean, data is infinitely, the ability to replicate it and store it is unbounded. So that I think, is the really big challenge in front of us.
Yeah, we're at a very early stage in terms of data, and it can't continue as is. It's too dangerous. It makes businesses too powerful. And it stops innovation. So you look at, I think Apple are kind of leading the way, is in they're very protective of your data. Yeah. Although I wouldn't like legislators to take a lead from Apple, Apple seems to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't
it's
go
because they're
yeah.
It's because they're not in the business of selling ads.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So there's nothing in it for them. So that's one of the reasons I haven't moved off Apple, is they seem to respect my data. And that for me is really, really important. And I think it's going to become more and more important over the next decade.
Yeah. It'll be certainly interesting to see how it plays out. I'm excited and a little bit worried, but we're all going to have to figure it out. So, Jim, thanks for joining the show. I really appreciate it.
Enjoyed it. Yeah, it's had a nice flow to the conversation, just like a good chatbot.
Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy Two and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast app and feel free to give it a rating. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.